Good morning. I think we'll go ahead and get started, and because it's a long day, and I don't think anybody needs it to get any longer, so. Call the meeting to order. Would you call the roll?
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee James?
Here.
Did you verify that the meeting notice was posted as required?
Yes, it was.
Okay, the first matter on our agenda is approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
I move that we approve the minutes from the last meeting as written.
Second?
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
The next item on our agenda is the academic and student affairs update. Dr. Westbrook, so you...
Dr. Westbrook.
I will note that we'll defer any action on tenure until Dr. Finney's here.
Okay. First again, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Trustee Hill, you know it's very difficult to put together a report that captures everything that we accomplish in both academic and student affairs. So what I typically do, although detailed in the extensive 30-page report, I just like to do some highlights, and those highlights basically involved the publication of books by faculty. This is without saying that other articles and referee journals have been submitted, but the ones I'd really like to highlight are those that have actually completed their work being an author of a published book. I will start with the College of Arts and Sciences. Professor Willie Johnson, he published a book, Using Scripture in the Grief Process. Also, something that I'm really excited about are opportunities for our faculty to serve as visiting professors internationally. Both Dr. Georges and Dr. Alicia Richardson, they're at the University of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And Dr. Conley, he's attending as a visiting professor at the University of West Indies. For the College of Business, Dr. Ernst Coupe, he has published a book called Corruption, An Analysis of Its Effect on Output, Investments, and Economic Growth. The College of Education, I'm proud to indicate that the College of Education was recently approved by the Illinois State Board of Education to offer a four-course sequence that leads to the early childhood special education approval. The reason why this is really important, it puts us in a good position in the planning process as we move forward in preparation of putting together a NEPR to offer an early childhood special education degree program, which is very much needed here in Chicago. Dr. Giss will talk to you more in detail regarding some of those other collaborations that are going on in the College of Education. The College of Health Sciences, recently it was indicated, I read information that came out from the Illinois Board of Higher Education, that Chicago State is on the agenda for approval of its HIV/AIDS Research and Policy Institute. So we're really excited about that. It will appear, it's on their April board agenda, so it will be presented at their April board meeting. In addition, you know, I don't want us to get too comfortable. I'm always pleased to talk about the accomplishments in terms of our pass rates. But, you know, it's somehow when, you know, I mention it, it's like, well, you know, for years they've had that pass rate. Well, you know, I want to continue to boast about it because it's not something that is easily accomplished. And specifically, I'm talking about the 2009 NCLEX RN pass rate for first-time test takers in the Department of Nursing. It was 95%. This 95% represents higher than the state of Illinois average of 91%, but also it exceeded the national average of 88%. So the Department of Nursing continues to lead the way regarding pass rates.
I just want to interject here just for a moment, because during my tenure on the board, there have been some significant, early on there were some very significant issues about that program and its pass rate. And it has been completely transformed in the time that I've been here.
It has been. It went from losing accreditation to being
a stellar performer.
Exactly. The Honors College. The Honors College has, for the first time, recruited a winter cohort comprised of 11 students. This is in addition to the 17 new students that were inducted in the September 2009 cohort. So we're really excited about that, that we were able to identify dollars to bring the additional cohort on board. Lastly, as you know, there are some great things happening at the institution, Higher Learning Commission being one. I think we're ready. I'm very optimistic. The university has received quite a bit of support. I'd like the minutes to reflect the support that Dr. Watson has provided, although it has been onerous with all of his additional homework assignments. But it has been a much improved document because of his input, his edits, and suggestions for revision. So I'd like the minutes to reflect that. In addition, if you have any, you know, other questions regarding anything that's in the report, I can address those.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
The report that was submitted, I feel very, very good about, and this is definitely a situation where this has been an opportunity for us, and it's a very positive opportunity for us, the focus visit, and the leadership that the provost has provided with regards to this opportunity has been invaluable to the university. And I need to acknowledge the provost and her leadership. And then she had two individuals who worked very close with her, and that is Dr. Gist and Dr. Balagan, who, without a doubt, the last 3 weeks put in 12-hour days every day, including Saturday and Sunday, to make sure that we got this document out. Not only that we got it out on time, but more important, that we got it out with a quality document. A document that is transparent, a document that is accurate. So I'd like to commend, you know, those two deans and the provost. But then I also like to commend, at another level, the total community, because we had some great leadership from some of our faculty. We had the vice president of the faculty senate. We had two faculty members.
Okay, Dr. Patiluri, he's the vice president for Senate. Dr. Paul Musial, as well as Dr. Mulagata.
They stepped up, and we had just some excellent, excellent input. We have had a series of meetings on campus with faculty, and we will continue between now and the actual visit to have more meetings with faculty, staff, and students to ensure that everybody understands what this document is and what this opportunity is. There are some clearly defined goals that we have set for the university, and we all must be working to meet those goals.
Mm-hmm. Trustee Hill, in addition, given that you served on the advisory task force, as you well know, There are three formats. One, to help re-educate the campus. Each member of the university task force has been charged to do another communication piece. And what we've done, we put together a PowerPoint presentation because we know that sometimes, you know, the pictures and the verbiage assist with that education. So all of us have been given an assignment. We will work with the groups that were originally assigned to us back in September when we began our first set of PowerPoint presentations. Because the thing that is very, very important when the team arrives, that it is inclusive. The team chair, Dr. Idaho, he has already sent me a list of 22 individuals that he wishes, the team wishes to meet. And I just happen to be looking at my email on Saturday. He has included another individual. And he had a caveat at the end of his email that said, please, I want to remind you that as we continue to review the report, there may be additional individuals we'd like to meet. An invitation has been extended to the Board of Trustees to meet with the team, and I will provide you with that information. Lastly, in addition to the PowerPoint presentations, I remember or I recall at one of the board at one of the last board meetings that some of the trustees indicated that they would prefer to receive things on flash drive or to receive those documents electronically. I have flash drives in my bag. I have the printed copies as well for each trustee. And it's really important. And although it's a very lengthy report, if you would just pay close attention to the conclusion, which consists of three pages, it really provides you with a very good overview of what the concerns were and how the university did an excellent job in responding to those concerns. So I have flash drives, I have three-ring notebooks, and so, you know, whatever the preference, I'm sure you'll let me know before this board meeting ends.
And, you know, it is customary that when Higher Learning Commission comes on a campus, that they meet with the Board of Trustees. And this is something that they take very serious.
Yes.
One, the fact that all the board members show up, but two, what they take very serious is they're going to actually talk to the board members about the content of the focus visit and in terms of what is written. And that's their, because their belief is the first criteria deals with governance. And governance, of course, to a large extent, is the board.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have already responded that I will be there.
Yes, I did get your response.
As requested, and I'm looking forward to reading the report.
And
I am looking forward
and
to reading
it. And I will make myself available in the event that there are some questions.
Okay, I appreciate
anytime.
That.
Anytime.
And we look forward to the board's response as to questions as to, well, how do you explain this here? Have you thought about this over here? Because there's one thing about Higher Learning Commission documents, self-studies. They are living documents. Mm. They are living documents. So you never you never have the last page. You know, so there's no such thing as, well, this is the last page. So let's keep that in mind, and we're open to comments, observations from the board members as to how we can strengthen it even before they come.
Because I know that Trustee Scott is new to the board. Trustee Scott, so that I can frame it for you, the concerns that were expressed began 2003 after the comprehensive team visit. And at that time, questions were raised about enrollment management. And the overarching concern was there appeared to be a decline in the enrollment, and they wanted to know why and how and what plans had the university put in place to respond to those concerns. The Higher Learning Commission requested that we submit a monitoring report, and this report was due June 2006. And in that monitoring report, we were supposed to respond to the concern regarding enrollment management. Well, we responded. However, it appeared that the response was insufficient, and it provided information that opened up even more questions. So as a result of that, we were asked to submit a progress report of June 2009. Once we submitted that report, now it's disaster, because the concern that was raised, and each time, remember, you always have a different set of readers, so each time they're going to be a different set of questions that are being raised. This time the major concern was we listed a lot of things that we were doing to respond to enrollment management, but we never showed if any of those things were effective. So in addition, we provided information that had nothing to do with enrollment management, which of course opened the door for even more questions. So this gave us an opportunity to, and Dr. Watson did mention it, but we did have consultants working with us. They kept us focused. Anytime we added anything, because sometimes we're too close to it. And if it was not related to any of the concerns, they had us to take it out. So I think the strategies that were used in putting the report together were welcomed. So I think as a result, it is a much improved report, and you know, we're very, very proud of it. And we think we'll do okay.
Okay, I'll look forward to reading it.
Okay, I have it with me.
Okay.
Other questions?
I don't think so. I do please convey the board's congratulations and appreciation to the authors of all those books and those who have been selected to be visiting professors. Those are worthy accomplishments, and it's nice to recognize them.
And I'm sure, and you know, the report indicates a lot of the grantsmanship that we've been involved in, but because I know that Dr. Karoma also provides a report to the board, you know, it doesn't make sense to have redundancy, because I am mindful of your time being very precious as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Madam Provost, do you have a new dean that you may want to introduce?
Yes. I never know when to do these things. Okay, I'm really, really pleased, and he knows that I am, as a matter of fact. Before I divulge too much information, I asked if he had signed the contract yet. I'd like to introduce Derek Collins. Derek, would you please stand? Mr. Collins. And I'm not sure if you want to say a few words, because I don't like to put people on the spot when I haven't given them a heads up. But Mr. Collins, he's now the new interim dean for the College of Business. You know, we've had the absence of a dean effective January. Dr. Hunt, Atha Hunt, who was the chair of accounting and finance, he stepped up to the plate, and he served in that capacity about a month. But now Mr. Collins has come. He has joined us via Northwestern Kellogg Graduate School. So I'm really, really excited. He's done some wonderful things there. I'm hoping that he will be able to duplicate many of those efforts here and under his leadership. I know we have great expectations, but we're optimistic that he can meet them.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So next we have Dr. Gist, who's going to talk to us about the Child Care Center and Charter School.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning.
As Trustee Hill said, I will give you an update on both the Child Care Center and the Charter School. We are moving ahead with plans to renovate three labs in the education building. These labs were previously used for industrial training, and we are converting those labs into a child care center that will be operated under the early childhood program in the College of Education. So we're very excited about that, because this moves toward meeting the mission of the College of Education, which of course is teacher training. And the Child Development Center, as they plan to call it in the early childhood program, will serve as a clinical site for teacher training. The tentative opening date, if we move ahead as scheduled, for the Child Development Center, if the renovation is complete, is January of 2011. The progress to date, we are preparing to move a lot of large equipment that is electrical. That electrical equipment is being disconnected, and it will be moved out of the labs. Property control has completed an inventory of all of that equipment that is in the lab. Materials and supplies that can be used by other units on campus have been made available to those units. So we have like the art department coming over and relocating equipment if supplies and equipment, if it is inventory, they are making sure that it is transferred to the other unit or to that particular unit. The arrangements have been made for authorities to transport that equipment either to Springfield or to other locations, whatever the decision is made as far as that is concerned. And of course, the faculty in the early childhood program are preparing for to operate the center as far as the curriculum is concerned, and they will oversee the total operations of the center. Are there any questions about the child care center before I move ahead to the charter school?
No.
Okay. Then I'll move ahead to the charter school. I guess about a year and a half ago, I first came before the board and indicated that actually when I first became dean that I was interested in starting a charter school, and that charter school would be located here on campus. Since that time, we put together a proposal, and that proposal has gone through a number of steps. The proposal requests that CPS, Chicago Public Schools, does the funding of the center based on the per student allocation. The proposal made its way all the way, actually, to the board, the Chicago Public School Board, and it was recommended for funding by the new schools committee. However, it was placed on the agenda for February 24th, the CPS board agenda for February 24th, but for some reason they took it off the agenda. After hearing the decisions that were made at that particular meeting, I believe that that was related to financing, because they voted to close two high schools, so it, in my mind, it wouldn't look good to approve a new high school if they were closing two high schools, and I think they also voted to close three elementary schools. So we were promised that it would go back on the agenda at some time in the future. We tentatively plan to open this charter high school here on campus fall of 2010. However, that won't be possible. If it goes back on the agenda, we're going to push for an opening date of fall 2011. So we're very excited about that, and of course we will be moving forward and pushing to ensure, I hope, that the CPS board approves the funding for the school.
And hopefully your students' ACT scores will be better than the school that Dr. Westbrooks was telling us about this morning, where they were touting the college acceptance rate, but the average ACT was 16 in the school. So.
Well, definitely we're looking for quality.
Okay.
Everything is going to be return to school is going to be in Englewood.
Okay.
Any questions? Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
College of Pharmacy update.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, it gives me great pleasure to talk about briefly the tremendous growth and progress of the College of Pharmacy. The report that I submitted has quite a bit of detail in it, and I'll just go over some of the highlights at this particular point. It starts out with the our status in terms of accreditation. And as you are aware, there are three points of accreditation within colleges and schools of pharmacy: pre-candidate status, candidate status, and full accreditation. Pre-candidate status is needed to open the doors to admit the first class of students, and we received that prior to admitting those students in August of 2008. After you admit your inaugural class, you have up to 3 years to achieve the second status, which is candidate status. And what it does is confers your students all the rights and privileges of a fully accredited program. So we had 3 years to achieve that. We achieved it in under one. So that was a wonderful thing, a marvelous thing. And in addition, the accreditors, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, noted our program in terms of its curricular integration, the ability to merge and supplement and augment the didactic aspects, the experiential aspects, and the pharmacy practice aspects, so much so that that noteworthiness was shared with our Pharmacy Association and American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy, where our program is being benchmarked, in fact, on the online right now. So we're very pleased with those accomplishments. We have an update report that is due to ACPE, the Accreditation Council, on April 15th. And I've highlighted in the report the areas that we need to update them on. But in particular, there are a couple of areas that they are concerned about and have their eye on, where we have to indicate in detailed fashion what the status of them are. And those are the ones that are indicated here in terms of the progress of the college and the university pertaining to the Douglas Hall third floor renovation, including any contingencies for continued delays, the status of the faculty research laboratories, and the stability of future financial resources to secure the college's continued growth and development, particularly because we're located in the state of Illinois. ACPE is also located in Chicago, so they're very much aware of what's going on in the state. In terms of the renovation, Douglas Hall, indeed the project itself has been approved by the state as a capital project, but unfortunately unfunded at this time because of the situations. And so together here, we're looking at how to meet that challenge to the point where we can continue the renovation and ACPE will not have an issue in terms of what those contingency plans are. But indeed, the solution or the remedy is to get that money. I mean, there's the bottom line. So we are in continued discussions in terms of how to realign our resources so that we can move some aspects of this project along, particularly in the areas of the faculty research laboratories, because this is a very important component to make sure that we have enough space. We will have 270 students enrolled in our program as of August of this year. And for all practical purposes, it's a matter of using every available classroom, lecture hall, and other types of physical space resources within the Douglas Hall building to be able to achieve that particular mission. And indeed, the university is doing everything that it possibly can to help us achieve that. And so I want to thank Dr. Watson, Dr. Westbrooks, and everyone else who has worked so diligently to help us meet these challenges and to be able to exceed where we need to be.
The only thing that I want to add is that the faculty and staff at the School of Pharmacy have, scale of 1 to 10, they put forth a 12 effort. The only thing that I believe is really going to keep us from being able to achieve full accreditation for this program is the funding. Mm-hmm. If we do not get that $19 million from the state, we are in trouble. The state appropriated the dollars, but they have not funded the dollars. And that those dollars were appropriated, you know, a number of years ago. Those dollars are needed to make very strategic changes that will make it possible for the accreditation body to come in and, you know, finalize the accreditation.
Right.
We are going to Springfield, we have been to Springfield, and we are making this very clear that this is one of our top priorities. We are communicating with the governor's office to make sure the governor's office knows. So whatever help, you know, board members can give, we greatly appreciate it. But the $19 million that we need to finish out Douglas Hall, for example, a roof. You're going to see that we put through an emergency request for a roof. They're just some very basic things that we must do. We cannot build the labs until we get a roof on it.
Very true.
I'm sure this will be a topic at the Finance Committee as well in terms of the status of budget and funding and all those sorts of things. And it's, you know, it's just a sad situation given how important this program is and the desperate need for pharmacists and so.
I think that it goes beyond just sadness. It's almost criminal, the lack of attention to this university's need and to the students. And I'll be going out to Springfield on the 10th to deal with this issue and hold a press conference with other trustees who would like to be there about the state funding issues. And in my opinion, it just simply looks as if the state is committing a crime against us in a way of violating our basic civil rights. I was going to mention this in my report for the full board meeting, but I'm sitting in classrooms right now where four of the classes that I am taking, I'm only taking four, have classroom rosters of 30 or more students in them. And I know that, you know, the number that was agreed to by the professors and things of that nature was 38. But when you're in a classroom that houses about 25 people and you have students during test days who are lined up around the corner on just stools and, you know, chairs trying to take exams on their laps, that's not a good thing. And if there's a need to just build a building, a standalone building, just for examinations, then let's get that funding so that we can build that building. It's just time that we get aggressive. And this is the perfect opportunity, seeing that, you know, it is an election year. And if we can just build up the will and the press to follow us and help us spearhead this effort, it would be great.
I'd like to just respond to that. If we are going to have a campaign that includes some legislative advocacy, where we are, you know, we want to have our voices heard in Springfield, I think that it's got to be very well orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that the, you know, accusations of criminal behavior would be helpful, mm-hmm, to the cause of the university. I know it is, you know, there are a number of issues. If we all, anybody follows the press, there are a number of issues facing the state when it comes to its fiscal issues. I mean, the state is really at a bad point when it comes to money. But I think that we have to, and maybe there's a list of priorities that we have, you know, as a university, in terms of what are our crisis issues that we really need immediate attention to and immediate funding. I mean, because you know, child welfare is at a crisis point, and it's not to put. Not that our needs are not as great as the child welfare system, but we have to make sure that we prioritize what is most critical right now for the advancement of the university, and make sure that we have it is a list that we've studied, because we really don't want to. I think. You know, cry wolf, but we know that there are some things that are really imperative for the university. But I think that we have to be measured in what we ask for, make sure that we have had a priority list before we, and that we should restrain ourselves in the rhetoric that we use.
Let me weigh in on that. Thank you very much. Trustee, because I think that's about where I would be. The state at this moment is $13 billion in the red. And my sense is that a number of state agencies and or programs are seriously taxed. And it seems to me that this school and its programs are paramount in our minds, but you have other needs that the state has got to address that it might not be able to successfully address. But even beyond that, it seems to me that we have to make sure that we are using all of the existing resources we have in order to meet our needs. Now, I've been to the School of Pharmacology, and I walked that program, and I looked at the plans. It would occur to me that with respect to the priorities that have to be met, we might want to revisit the bids and the specifications that were designed during more abundant periods to see whether those plans really are the ones that we have to execute. That's for the pharmacy school. We didn't have this austere moment that we have now. 5 years ago when those plans were designed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But right now we're in a moment of austerity, and where we are challenged to make sure that we do everything we can on our side. Mm-hmm. So I would want to ask the school and the architects to take a very hard look and see if there are alternative materials and alternative technologies that might be applied in order to reduce the overall ask from $19 million to something less. And then it would occur to me that we would make sure that the ask relates to the absolute necessities mm-hmm. for accreditation, absolute necessities. Mm-hmm. And those that are not absolutely necessary at this particular point, we may want to push them back a bit mm-hmm. to make sure that we do have those matters, physical improvements or capital improvements that are absolutely critical for accreditation. Then it seems to me that we have to have Plan B. And mm-hmm. Plan B, I think, has got to then involve fundraising. We may find it helpful to go to the private sector and to seek additional, organize a campaign there to raise additional money in order to make capital improvements. I would say that it's a lot easier, with my experience, it's a lot much easier to raise money for capital improvements than it is to raise money for operating, because it's capital, it's presumed to be one time and not ongoing. And so I would invite us to think seriously about raising capital money from the private sector. There are certain certain sources, it seems to me, the drug companies that at this particular moment flush with cash, even though we're in a crisis for health. They're not, if we look at their annual reports, it would occur to me that they're not necessarily having a sense of loss. And that's in many instances driven by the fact that so many of our population are involved in entitlements for medical care and for drugs. And that means almost all of our senior citizens are, and those who have serious SSI problems, even if they're not senior citizens. So the drug companies occur to me to be a place that we need to look at for a fund to give us support. That might mean that the president may have to walk over to the foundation and enroll the foundation in a new strategy, and that is to help raise money in order to for us to meet this, what I consider a very, very important crisis in terms of accreditation for the School of Pharmacology. In other words, what I'm really saying. And then finally, on the matter that Trustee James mentioned, I have to say that we have to think outside of the box when it comes to making sure that we have adequate space for examinations and what have you. And if we have to have shared facilities that exist right now to make sure that conduct our examinations, then we should do that. We should make sure that every inch of space that we can make available to our students for them to take examinations. We may find that the School of Business has to share some space with other schools or schools of science, but we cannot, in this time, we cannot afford to operate in silos. Well, this is my space, and nobody can come into my space but people who are enrolled in my college. That, I think, is not going to be helpful in these days. And maybe I'm too old to remember when, at least from the history books, we were operating in one classroom period. But we're going through a major crisis. And unfortunately, it is not going to end in 2010. It is not going to end in 2011. It might be better in 2012. But that's the reality. And there's no sense in creating a world that does not exist, because we have always been able to go to the state government and get the state government to bail us out. The state government does not have the capacity to bail this entire, every code department out. And it won't have it. And I'm told already that as we go to Springfield, it is likely that this General Assembly session will pass a get-by budget, no increases, and for 6 months. And then after 6 months, which will be the end of the election period, November, of course, the election will be over, and then they will attempt to pass a broader budget. Well, there's some members of this board that have heard that story before. And that story goes like this: get the heat off of us right now, and then wait for the election. And once the election is over, then we're going to do the right thing. Well, if you believe that, I've got a bridge in London to sell you.
Points well taken. Actually, there's quite a few of those that we have addressed. We are good citizens on campus, and we indeed don't subscribe to the "this is only our space." Trustee James was talking globally in terms of the university proper and concerns in terms of space for examinations.
I think I'm clear about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't thinking that I wasn't attempting to indict your the School of Pharmacology at all.
Not an issue.
But I'm not even sure that he was in the building when he was trying to take his exams. He was talking about something much broader.
That's
but I
true.
Wanted to address it, since it's this moment that we're talking.
Absolutely.
But it's not to indict the School of Pharmacology.
In terms of the realignment of resources, we know that that is indeed very important. In fact, in a number of meetings, we've talked about it. In the report that I submitted, the update, that's why I pulled out those particular areas where we looked at, you know, how do we achieve this this need to satisfy ACPE and ensure that we have progress and move forward. In terms of the development aspects, we also agree that it will be very important to find alternative sources of funding. And from the private sector, absolutely. There are a number of strategies to take a look at in that particular area. The drug companies, the pharmaceutical manufacturers, absolutely. But also areas that traditionally colleges and schools of pharmacy don't tap. For instance, we're heavily involved in using technology within pharmacy programs, both within the college and also in terms of direct patient care. Why don't you touch the Sun Microsystems and other types of technological companies? And those are also discussions, you know, that we've had. We've recognized within the whole workforce planning process the need to have a stronger tie to developmental activities, to have individuals who are point within the College of Pharmacy as well as working with the foundation on those particular areas. So we cannot, as you say, and we don't exist now where we only rely on the state to meet the financial needs. In the future, it'll be less and less viable. And so that is indeed very important that we are proactive and look at how we can sustain the types of programs that we are looking to do to ensure not only the stability and the growth of the College of Pharmacy, but as it relates to the university as well. So we all win when we address this in a very proactive way, as you indeed have suggested. So we're right there with you. And so certainly any type of suggestions, any connections that any of the board members may have in that particular area in terms of who we will tap, that becomes very important. Another thing that I'll add, Dr. Slatkin, as you know, has retired, but he actually will be working with us. Actually, it started in this month, in March. One of his responsibilities is development as well. We have a number of irons in the fire that we had begun prior to his retirement, and those are picking up speed because we know the importance of this in terms of vital growth. From a legislative perspective,
Can you give me some examples? You said you've got some irons in the fire, and these are in terms of just development or looking for dollars, like private dollars. Is that what you're talking about?
As an example, there's a company that we have been working with called Apothecary Images. We're looking at launching a fundraiser, which not only would help with the beautification, let's call it that, of the physical space. There are pictures that go up on the walls that depict a number of pharmacy scenes that would include traditional like mortars and pestles and those types of things would be positioned within the laboratory areas. But also pharmacists engaged in current activity, service provision, pharmacists and student pharmacists administering vaccinations, flu vaccines, pneumococcal vaccines, and so on, measuring blood pressures, working with patients who have diabetes. So there's a number of different shots, as you will, photos that are included in this particular program. So the company that we're working with will provide these photos, and then they're framed, and then individuals will pay for the photos. We are the recipient of those, and then it helps to, because of the price, then it raises additional dollars to support the operations of the college. You know, we're doing it from a stepwise perspective. That's one aspect. We still have additional dollars that that Walgreens will be giving us. In fact, I just had a conversation with them last week. So we're expecting somewhere in the neighborhood of about $300,000 to come in the next couple of months. This is not a new initiative. This was one that was in place already. And
Dean, could I interrupt you on this? Is it likely that we could get a long-term commitment from Walgreens that would allow us to anticipate a capital? For instance, if they said to us that they would make a multi-year commitment, say mm-hmm. 10 years, mm-hmm. that during that 10-year period they would grant us, for capital purposes now, mm-hmm. Another $250,000 or maybe $500,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you had a commitment from a company like Walgreens to give you long-term capital funding, then you have the ability to borrow money to help
finance capital improvement now. So this is, again, a matter of thinking outside of the box. Walgreens is a, I suspect that their stock is traded on open market as AAA rated, AAA. So they're their promises and commitments are secure. But it seems to me that we've got to move into that vein of looking for capital that would be immediate fundraising in a campaign, but also long-term capital infusions that may allow us to collect the debt. Now, that may mean that the money has to go to the foundation, which is another issue, but I'm desperately looking for ways to help make this work. Finally, on this one, you walked into the, because of Trustee Scott's probing, you walked into this area of technology. And the real question I would have on that is, have we really looked carefully at operations for operating the School of Pharmacology based on new technology, technology that did not exist 5 years ago, at least outside of the Army and or the military? They always know everything before anybody else does. But have a look carefully with respect to our curriculum and how we're going to provide our teaching opportunities and with the view of using technology as a means of reducing the amount of capital that we might need in order to make presentations.
Now, are you talking about online education? Distance education?
I don't know what I'm talking about. but I'm trying to think of ways to cutting into this $19 million we need.
I'll say that the point about seeking a long-term commitment from them as far as grant dollars or things that they would be willing to give us in order to give us the ability, the financial position to then be able to borrow in order to take care of the needs that we have that are immediate for just the College of Pharmacy, yes, that would be a great step. However, I also, to go back to Trustee Scott's point earlier about prioritizing, I think that it's very important that we do continue to apply pressure on the state government, because if we do release the pressure, even for a moment, they will take that opportunity to yet again continue that disparity of financially serving Chicago State in comparison with other universities in this area. Along with that, I would like to point out that we already do have some of the measures in place. We just aren't using them to their full capacity. Right here, we have Dr. Scheinbuchs and Richard Darger, who are here, and they could speak to the development of smart programs for teaching online classes. If we don't have a serious commitment to online and hybrid courses at this university, we're going to continue to see the problems with having overcrowded classrooms. And as a senior, there is absolutely no reason why I should be in a classroom with 35 other individuals and there's not enough space to adequately house 35 individuals in that classroom. Now, there are universities that have 35 people in the classroom, and each person who's in that course can be adequately served. But if we don't have the space to do it, then we need to find other measures to address that need. And I'm not sure what's the status or what's the holdup with a larger initiative towards offering more online classrooms, especially to those classes that traditionally are overcrowded. But we need to investigate it and come up with a real solution to the problem. And if that means that we have to pay our faculty more to take on that course and take on the, and do it.
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about this from a College of Pharmacy perspective. There are two programs out of the 110 colleges and schools of pharmacy in the United States that actually teach their programs online. It was a journey for them in terms of being able to prove to the Accreditation Council that indeed online education was as appropriate as face-to-face education. Certainly looking at board results and so on, and indeed it was deemed that was the case. But there are a lot of safeguards that have to be put in place for that. And the Accreditation Council, within their standards and guidelines, have specific areas that they look at in terms of the viability of online education. In terms of our particular program, it's not an area that we are looked at from the accreditation perspective to fully develop at this point prior to achieving full accreditation, which would be the year after or after the first class graduates. As a part of our strategic planning process, though, we are indeed looking at ways to deliver, let's say on a more limited basis, I guess, electives, for instance. We have to start somewhere. And so that's a natural fit that would not directly impact our ability to achieve full accreditation to start off with. And after that point, however, then we're able to expand the program in whatever way we choose based on what the needs of the university and the college are. So it is one of those areas that we will be closely looking at in terms of how to deliver the curriculum in a quality way. The other thing I wanted to say about legislative activities and advocacy. The College of Pharmacy has been very much involved in these types of activities about pharmacy, the practice of pharmacy in the state. So we have about 50 individuals who are going down to Springfield on, in fact, it's Wednesday, and as a part of Illinois Pharmacy Legislative Day. Last year we went down, it just so happens that that was the day that the Appropriations Committee was meeting. And a picture is worth a thousand words. I think the individuals who were down there last year could attest that the back of the room was full of pharmacy students with their white coats. And it was a glorious thing. And so we'll be down there again on Wednesday. I'll also be attending that. To wrap up, I wanted to point out that, again, out of the 110 colleges and schools of pharmacy across the country, from underrepresented minority student enrollment, we are number 9. And that's because that is a big part of our mission, that we're very proud of that. In our second year of existence, we have the 9th highest underrepresented minority student enrollment across the country. In terms of student retention and progression, we're at 99% retention, which is higher than most schools of colleges and schools of pharmacy. As a part of our accreditation process, we are asked to predict what our attrition will be in our program, and we are much, much under that particular number. Now, will it hold? You know, students do have problems as they move through the program. In my report, I outlined some of our strategies in terms of retention, our remediation process, our program to work with students, because we take a lot of time to admit them. We want them to be successful. And so we're very pleased with that. From our professional practice partnerships, that network is growing. We have a strong relationship with the University of Chicago Medical Center. And we've been very fortunate to work with their clinicians and the center in terms of student education, where we have faculty who actually work for the university as well, meaning University of Chicago, and come over and deliver therapeutics content. And our students then work with those individuals there at the medical center itself. And so you have real-time current education and application. Also, we just sealed a relationship with Northwestern Memorial Hospital a couple of weeks ago, and we'll have a faculty member who will be joining us in August, or actually July. And that individual's specialty is infectious disease, so we also now have that connection, and our students will be working there as well. We're very close to Rush University Medical Center in terms of a contract, and our network is growing, growing, growing. Student scholarships have moved along. Student organizations, our students and faculty are very much involved in those particular areas. I would like to point out the number of appointments, awards, publications, and grants that our faculty are currently involved in. That would be locally as well as nationally, including elections. So it is a requirement that our faculty are indeed involved in professional activities to a point of being leaders, prominent leaders, locally, statewide, and nationally. And it's funny, my our chair of pharmaceutical sciences, Dr. Gentry, he says he wanted to bring this up because it sounds a little self-serving if I say it, but I'm actually very proud that I've been just appointed to the Illinois State Board of Pharmacy and for a four-year term. And so in addition to being on top of pharmacy practice here in the state, that it also additionally brings prominence to the university as well as our college in terms of being a force to be reckoned with as, you know, as it pertains to the practice. Our students are doing well. I guess that's all I'll say because we've been talking quite a bit in the time. There are a few other grants that, or I should say awards, that students have gotten since I actually put this report together. One of them last week, one of our first year students, has been appointed to a national internship with the Indian Health Service out in Arizona, the COSTEP program. It's a highly competitive program. And when he told me, I said, wow, you know, this is wonderful. So on top of having our first Schweitzer Fellow, which is a service program, it's a second year student at this point, and he was the only student pharmacist that was selected. And the student pharmacists are selected from the various colleges and schools of pharmacy. He was the only pharmacy student, so that put us on the map, definitely. And with some of the other initiatives, a managerial internship where there's 5 students selected nationally, and 2 of those slots last week went to Chicago State University College of Pharmacy students. So we're moving. We're very proud. The college is doing well, and we're making the university proud. So any questions?
Just a comment. You guys are doing an excellent job over there. You're very aggressive in your plans, and that's something that I admire.
I love my hardworking coworkers. It's such a great family, and it's such a great thing to be here at the university. The university is supportive. We work together as a partnership, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And Trustee Scott, I would like to respond to your recommendation in terms of us coordinating an effort to go to Springfield. We are coordinating that effort April 20th. We will be taking 5